Christmas is all around me, and so the feeling grows. And if we get, I'm going to get naked. No. Kids,
so
don't buy drugs.
Where will we be, each of one of us, if this comes out on the 25th? Where are we all?
Berlin.
Well, me and Anouk are in Berlin, probably enjoying some early morning beverages of the beer kind. Where are you, Jan? Yeah, back in Provence.
I'll be with family. Yeah, good. In Provence, yeah, yeah.
25th. Nice.
Are you a sociopath, no, Jan? Is that why you're not saying these things?
No, I just don't. I don't crack a joke immediately about how the mother was. No, no, I just don't say anything. Everyone is dying to hear about your music analysis now, Adam.
Oh, we're here. Right. Yeah. So, well, this afternoon while I was doing the dishes, I was like, oh, you know what? I'll put the headphones on and I'll listen to some music. And I thought, you know what? I'll go and listen to Anna and the Apocalypse because I really did like a lot of the songs. I'll give it a go.
We are the Good, the Bad, and the Just Plain Standard podcast. Pump it up.
Ooh, ooh, no such thing as a Hollywood ending. Ooh. Ooh, no such thing as a Hollywood ending. Hello, everyone.
I hope that was in time, otherwise God knows how many hundreds of pounds I wasted on drum lessons.
Today
Hello.
Is all about
Anna and the Apocalypse.
Absolutely. Anna and the Apocalyptic. We didn't have enough A's for the usual thing displaying the title in the background.
Apocalypse.
But you can see the poster. And that's the version for Scotland, obviously. I think they made some versions with different flags, depending on where they were.
Yeah, it's filmed just up the road. Well, I say just up the road if you're a port of Glasgow, you know. It's near about here, farther up, which is very cool.
Absolutely. I'll just start by saying happy birthday to Kirk Douglas.
Yes.
No way.
It's unrelated, but the last episode we recorded was behind the candelabra with his son. And when I posted on Instagram a happy birthday to the dad, I didn't realize that he was still alive. 102.
It is incredible. It is incredible. 102 is a hell of an age.
That's a very good go. Yeah.
Because usually you think for blokes, the average age is around 80 plus. You're like doing really well as a man.
Yeah.
Women seem to last a lot longer, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's changing, but it used to be the case that women lived longer than men.
Yeah, I think that's still the case.
There's also the thing as well, I'm sorry to any listener that's over 6 foot, shorter people live longer. Not because of dietary or anything, just because of the ability, how much the heart has to work to pump blood around the body. So instead of the difficulty of having to push it up like 6+ foot, if you're shorter than like 5'4" or whatever, the shorter you are, the less effort your heart has to do to pump blood around your body. So that's why shorter people, on average, live longer than taller people.
Also, Dalton Trumbo was born on the 9th of December.
Trumbo?
Yes.
Good reference, because what's his name? Jim? No, John is in Trumbo, the love interest of Anna.
Okay, is he?
Yeah, he is.
Oh.
I checked his IMDb earlier.
He's also in, I talked about that at some point, but yeah, okay.
Oh, John, that's it.
That makes sense. Yeah, he's, okay, cool. We'll probably have, and because we haven't talked about movies set on about the movie industry yet, I think Trumbo is a good one, and Bryan Cranston is playing Trumbo, and Alan Tudyk is in that movie, but yeah, I think he's in all movies ever now. Okay, so there are two origin stories. So this year's Fringe Festival, when I went to see the ACS shows, I met in a queue someone we know called Janet Lawson.
Of course, yeah.
And she went to see the shows and we had the occasion to talk for a while. And she talked to me about this Anna and the Apocalypse that was coming out not so long after and that she was in. And came September, there was a premiere at the Glasgow Film Theatre where I saw Silas again. And he told me that, so the director of that film, John McPhail, was at ACS during their year. They
All right,
did the,
okay.
The mock audition, I think it was.
Yeah,
right,
mock audition.
The one we had with Paul and Catriona. I was going to go Kate, but I'm like, because I was always confused because isn't Kate the other one that was also in Isolani as well?
Yeah, Kate McLaughlin. Yeah, but and we call Catriona Cat.
Cat.
That doesn't help.
Cat. It doesn't. That's why I was like, oh God, is it? Yeah.
Yeah.
And I finally saw it, so that was in September, and then the film was finally released on the 30th of November here in Scotland, and I saw it again, and the third time with you guys.
Jesus, you've been busy with this one.
Yeah, I've been busy with this one. So basically, the origin story now of this film, in 2011, a young Scottish chap named Ryan McHenry wrote and directed a short film called Zombie Musical. In 2013, Ryan's Vine series, Ryan Gosling Won't Eat His Cereal, became viral.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you've
seen it. The director of this is the guy that created that Vine?
Nope.
Right, I was going to say.
The director of the Zombies. Short and who was supposed to do that. But in 2015, Ryan McHenry passed away. Yeah, and the zombie apocalypse lives on in Anna and the Apocalypse. And John MacPhail is directing.
Wasn't there a tribute thing at the end of this?
I don't think there was a tribute, but he's in the co-screenwriter.
Oh, okay.
What was it? Though I did see something recently. They did have a tribute at the end of it.
Right.
But I can't remember what it was. I don't think it was Behind the Carbolumda. I thought it was this.
No, it's somewhere.
Something else.
It's, yeah, something I also watched recently. I have said that in my notes somewhere, but I don't remember what it is right now. Oh, there was a Q&A after, obviously, their premiere at the GFT. And it was cool because they talked about the fact that they loved and always had in mind Buffy the Vampire Slayer and that musical episode.
Still not seen it yet.
So it's actually starring Ella Hunt as Anna, Malcolm Cumming as John, Sarah Swire as Steph, and apparently she also did the choreography, and that's quite cool.
Hmm.
Christopher Levo as Chris, Ben Wiggins as Nick, Marley Sue as Lysa, Mark Benton as Tony, Paul Kay as Savage, and Janet Lawson as Mrs. Hinsman.
Good to throw Janet in the casting there, yeah. Yeah, she was good in this. Like, that's great.
It's Kat was also there, and we were wondering if she was probably one of the best. Well, one of the most interactive zombies there was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as far as zombie acting goes, I think that Janet was up there because you see a lot of zombie films and it's all based on like the makeup and stuff, but there's an actual performance with Janet's in this, which is kind of rare with zombie films. You're always like, you just start running and making noises, but there will seem to be a bit more going on, which was nice.
Her physicality is really good. I mean, it would be because isn't she the president of...
Yeah, she's now...
She was the treasurer at some point and now she's... I think she's the president. Yeah,
she's now in charge. Yeah.
We talked about that also quickly.
British Association...
That's the British BA. So, British Association of Stage and Screen Combat. What was it? Yeah. British,
stage and screen combat.
Yeah. BASSC.
Yeah.
They talked in a Q&A quickly something that I didn't know, and it made you laugh when it happened. So clearly that's for Scottish people. I don't remember the name of the actor, well, of the person, the TV presenter.
Oh, Jackie Bird.
Oh, yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
So for those who don't know, Jackie Bird is a BBC Scotland correspondent. She often hosts the Scottish 6 o'clock and 10 o'clock news. So she's like a primetime newsreader in Scotland. So that's why that Easter egg and cameo is quite good.
That's great that they got her.
Jackie Bird's in this film.
Yeah, I talked about in the Q&A about the experience that it was her first time doing a fiction. So it felt really weird to have people telling her that what she was doing was good. Yeah, you're doing great. That's excellent kind of thing. Because obviously you don't have that.
No, we're not with journalism, though.
One of the guys during the Q&A was responsible for the sexy child joke.
Wait, what?
Oh, yeah. Who?
How do you mean? Like?
Oh, Nick, you're such a child. A sexy child? No, wait.
That was a good joke. I liked it.
So what do you mean?
You wrote it. Well, there was a co-writer there. And you said, yeah. That's
For a minute, I'm like, the joke came out of the Q&A. I was like, wait, how did they put the joke back in the movie? Sorry, that was just me getting confused.
Well, actually, you know, the production, this movie was finished in 2017. It took a while to get it to global. Well, it's actually still limited, but you can't. It went like for 5 dates, I think, in Cineworld, and it's still at GFT. But yeah, I mean,
apparently it's had an American release, but I don't know where. It has had an American release.
Yeah. Before the world premiere was in the US.
Right. Okay.
Last year. Yeah.
That's good. It's nice to see something very British. Actually, it definitely has the feel of British cinema to this, which is nice, especially when it comes to musicals, because there is, and you use Anouk's favorite word. I'm going to use it. the musical genre is very hard not to Hollywoodize. You know, like the pristine and clean and just, you know, the feel that musical theatre does have.
Ooh, there's no such thing as Hollywoodize.
Better stop before I get a copyright claim for this.
Yeah.
But well, no, it was nice the fact that, this probably as well, Jan, why you didn't immediately go, oh, this is a musical, I hate it, because it shied away from some of the major tropes. Although they're there in homage because that gets you into it. I mean, for me, it didn't feel overly musical.
Yeah, the dialogue-song ratio is quite nice.
Mm. Yeah.
And it's not, you've got some story developing through dialogue also.
I think that's quite a great choice, story-wise and directorial-wise. Get out eventually. The more the film starts with a very musical feel, and then as it gets more, the apocalypse begins happening, it slowly slips further and further away from a musical and slips into the zombie horror role.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of describe this film to me as a coming of age story that is interrupted by a zombie apocalypse, which is really interesting because coming of age and horror as two genres are often mixed, you know, with... Anouk was talking to me last night about It Follows, which, am I right in saying that's about if you sleep with somebody, you get this disease, almost like Ring in a way?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I haven't heard like a Q&A with the director or any of the production company, but it's basically about once you sleep with someone, this disease leaves you and goes to the person that you slept with.
Mm.
And I feel like there's like a kind of STD feel to it. Like once you've, and it's also coming of age because you have to also learn about these things, you know, like sex all this kind of stuff.
Where I was going with it is the idea of losing innocence. The coming of age story often is about that you are capturing the last moments of your youth. You know, if we go with like American Graffiti, where the cast are driving around before they all leave and go their separate ways after high school, or they're going to go to college, they're going to get a job, or even more recent, or even going and then to the horror genre with, especially because this is Anna as our protagonist, if we go back to say like Nosferatu and we have the sacrifice of I can't remember the wife's name in Nosferatu.
I want to say Helen. But
how she basically gives her life, the whole coming back to that horror can be used.
Yeah.
For innocence, in innocence sake, because she is innocent because she hasn't met Nosferatu, she hasn't gone on the same journey, but she learns and sacrifices herself ultimately. So in a way, there are multiple things that you can, horror and coming of age can link together with similar ideas. And I think that's done quite well here as well.
Yeah, it's like learning, right? Like it's kind of the most brutal learning arc that she did, but she pretty much lost everything before she then left the town that she was brought up in.
Yeah,
she lost her best friend, her father, she'd already lost her mom, and the friends that she now has made are kind of not really her friends in the beginning.
I found
that interesting because it's kind of metaphorical. Like you kind of have to leave everything behind, lose everything before you really know who you are and what you need.
While I remember, there's a French film we should definitely look at on the back of this, maybe in the start of the new year, called, I think it's 400 Days. It's like a coming of age classic that everyone refers to if they direct coming of age movies.
I don't know that one.
It ends with the child on the beach turned around and looks at the camera. It's a really
black and white one.
Yeah, it's a famous French film, but I can't remember the full title.
Is that Les 400 Coups?
It might be. I'll look up.
Well, I don't.
Could be.
Yeah, Malcolm Cumming as John was also, I saw him on stage when they did the Scottish production of Cyrano.
Oh, right.
He was there. Yeah, I saw it right after watching Anna and Apocalypse, actually. And Ben Wiggins, so that's Nick.
Yeah.
I just saw him in Antony and Cleopatra.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Both of them have really good faces. They've got really good looks. And Ben Wiggins is definitely, like, he's got such a musical, or theatre face. Like, it's so chiselled and... It's like he looks really musical theatre in a good way.
The 400 Blows. is the film, 1959.
Le Quatre Cents
Coups. Right, yeah. But sorry. That is the, we should talk about that as well, because I watched an excellent thing on BBC iPlayer hosted by Mark Kermode, where he goes through different genres. So there's sci-fi, horror, coming of age, and others. And he talks about that. And I was like, okay, that's, we should probably look at that and have a look, because it looked really interesting. Because every coming of age film seems to take something from the 400 Blows. So we should look at that.
There are plenty of inspirations that I've noticed. There was the Spielberg reveal when they're all in the bubble thingy, and then the army. You had the guy, the army, well, just look for yourself and you see everyone, and then boom, you see outside. And obviously some Edgar Wright reveals.
Right.
Yeah.
Like the zombie head that was just behind Anna's seat, well, on the, I don't know how you call those balançoire thing, the child playground thing. When
Wings.
It was a seesaw.
Oh, seesaw, yeah.
When she hits it down and then it hits the zombie in the head?
No, that's the first one when she was seated.
The swings.
Sorry, right. You were right.
Yeah, so there were plenty of stuff, like it was jelly-beaning nicely into the fact that there was this thing and then you couldn't see, and then, the guy, the zombie for the first time was actually the head just behind her.
Adam even said this to me in the cinema, that they have Shaun of the Dead homages. There are two scenes which are literally taken from Dawn of the Dead.
Dawn of the Dead. That's right.
We're
cutting each other off.
It's fine. We're all very excited.
The one that was a long take in Shaun of the Dead, right?
Yeah, so the when they're both singing.
Yes.
And they're not seeing the chaos around
them.
Oh,
you mean that? I when I saw that, I thought of Dawn of the Dead. Even I don't know if it's in there. I can't remember if it's in the original. It probably is. But in the remake, recently, she discovers that the apocalypse happens in that sort of estate area, and she like runs outside and it's all chaos at the same time. So when Anna's like walking with the headphones and singing, that's what I was thinking of, like, oh, this is like Dawn of the Dead when she comes out of the house and all the chaos is happening in the housing estate.
Right.
And then obviously later on we get half one with the unfortunate death of John, which I have to say I didn't see coming.
Oh my, it shocked
me. Which is really well done. When he sacrificed himself, I'm like, oh, is this the Dawn of the Dead where they like tear the arms off? Or in Shaun of the Dead when the guy, it's from Black Books, Dylan Morris.
Morin
is torn apart. No, we get that later with the villain, which is the same in Dawn of the Dead. That is where that scene, it's in every horror, any zombie film worth its salt has something like that scene in it where somebody, the main villain, is torn apart. Even to the extent in Dead Set, we see it as well.
Yeah. Just about to say the Charlie Brooker. Yeah, the guy that you're supposed to really hate is just terrorized by 20 zombies.
You see
guts coming out. Like, it's so brutal.
We'll talk about Dead Set at some point.
But the other one was when they're in the bowling alley and he hits the music box and it starts playing music. That's taken from Shaun of the Dead as well. Even though the song is immediately loud and they use it as like they hit the zombies on the time of the beat of the song in Shaun of the Dead. They don't do it so much in Anna and the Apocalypse, but I was like, as soon as he, what is that thing called? The music...
Jukebox.
Jukebox, thank you. He like hits it and the music comes on. And so as soon as that happened, I was like, that's the Shaun of the Dead reference.
I did like anytime you see that, just the scene where they're whacking the crap out of the bartender to the Don't Stop Me Now.
Yeah.
With pool cues. It's just amazing.
Yeah. It's a really good scene.
I love that movie so much.
Those are the two that I saw.
Steph is great. Like, there's the zombie, just they are fighting, and then the hands of the zombie are ending up on our boobs.
Yeah, it was funny.
What's that actress's name? Because I think I'm going to check if it's the same person, but I don't.
Steph?
Yeah.
Sarah Swire.
I was wondering if she was actually American or where she's actually from, because there were moments where she sounded something else, but I don't know if that's because her accent is. Or if she's putting on an American accent. Anyway.
There is what I would start to define from now on as organic exposition, where someone who is not aware about the show don't tell rule would just have a character say, oh, today's the 23rd of December. No, here you've got Anna waking up and then just leaving her room, there is a 2 seconds delay, and then she comes back and removes the thing from the advent calendar on the 23rd.
Gotta do that. Absolutely. I mean, that will, if you've been watching any of our occasional thing that's on Instagram of me opening my calendar, you know, you've got to get the advent calendar open. You've got to do it. You wake up to do it.
It's a nice little way of showing the date.
Yeah, there are plenty of little things like this. They don't tell you. Yeah.
I mean, again, that's like in Dawn of the Dead, not Dawn of the Dead, in Shaun of the Dead as well, when he gets up to go to work and the door is still open, you know? And when we go past, we see that the dad hasn't returned. That moment there, the reveal of like something's not right. It's like, oh, the dad never came home.
Mm-hmm.
So there's all this sort of stuff as well. There's a lot of good stuff, and I'll talk about it later on when we talk about...
You like to say that, don't you, Adam?
I do, because...
Well, we'll talk about this at another time.
Well, we'll get there, and the story and the progression of it, of how it slowly changes from upbeat theme to darkness.
Well, there is something that's been bugging me for a while, and it happens here, but it's fun. It's weird. Something in life I never understood. I still don't. When you learn in a movie, and I guess it also happens in real life, but when you're with a friend and you learn that, I don't know, their mother died. Why is there always the line, I know I'm not using that line because I don't see the point, oh, I'm so sorry. I've seen lately someone who actually knew the mum, so that's okay, that's okay. But by that, I just don't get it.
Well, I think because it's, you forget, because I had somebody in my primary school, mother died of, I think it was breast cancer. And as you got older, you would say like, If you brought up, oh, my mum did this, if the person was around, you would forget. And I think the line, I'm so sorry, comes out of like, in a human response of like, you don't think about other people, especially in moment, usually in film and in this one here, where that moment comes from the other character being frustrated at their life. You know, like, my plight is worse than yours. And they say the thing, and then they realize, because they're a decent human being, they go, oh shit, I didn't even think, I should have thought. So I think that's where that sort of line does come from. The idea that it's not like you're saying, oh yeah, I know your mom's dead, I'll say this anyway, and you don't have any feeling. Like, if you're a normal human being with compassion and you realize you say something like that, you would be like, oh, I am sorry, I didn't mean to upset you.
Do you mean that, like, why we say that as human beings, like why we, like if someone says, oh, you know, my dad just died, oh, I'm so sorry,
yeah, I know,
like
yeah.
That response,
yeah,
I think it's a really British thing to do, because it's almost like saying, I'm really sorry that you had to go through that. That's how I take it.
And what, it's also a thing of like, what else do you say?
I know, it's something to immediately be like, to say, to acknowledge the fact that it's awful, but also not make it awkward.
Because you can't, it's not, the worst thing you can say is...
How?
No, not that. It's just like, I know what you're going through sort of thing. It's like trying to, you know, relate to something that is so far away is difficult, and you don't want to seem ingenuine by saying something like, oh, I know it must be a tough time, I know you must be really hurting right now. You don't want to be that sort of person saying like, I know how you feel. So the safety response is say, I'm sorry for your loss, I'm so sorry, but in that way you are being, you know, that person. Mm-hmm. It's ironic, you want to escape being something, and then by saying that, you are that person, because everyone knows that's the immediate response. It's a formality now, I feel.
I just don't, I mean...
Are you a sociopath, no, Jan? Is that why you're not saying these things?
No, I just don't, I don't crack a joke immediately about how the mother was... No, I just don't say anything. Just like, I was in a situation a few years back, which is very weird, going to a funeral because you were around and you know nothing about the people.
Mm-hmm. That is weird.
And obviously there is this moment when there is a line and everyone goes to say, pay their respects or whatever to the remaining ones.
Yeah.
And then you have to find something to say.
Yeah.
So, well, I managed to find something around.
That is difficult, because that is a situation where you are coming up to the person, and it's, in some cases it can be seen of like, what do you say? There is no... you're right. What do you say? And honestly,
I'm sorry for your loss.
And having been in that situation, you're not, it's not that you don't care what the people are saying to you. It's like you're kind of numb to the situation anyway, you know?
See, I didn't see myself or could say I'm sorry for your loss. It was more in the lines of be brave kind of thing.
Yeah,
that's fine.
In that terrible experience.
Exactly.
But when it's in the past or in the stuff that we're actually talking about,
yeah,
I just don't say anything I just don't.
I think in film, the more annoying one is when they say something and immediately like grab their mouth, like, oh, I didn't mean to say that. Like the whole, I shouldn't have said that idea.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than this person saying, I'm so sorry, because they realize they've put their foot in it. So I feel that naturally that is what people do.
Well, it's just something that you can say.
Yeah.
And then you can carry on just so that you know, they know that you've heard them and it's not awkward. It's just like, I'm really sorry that you went through that, or I'm sorry for your loss, etc. And then you can move on if you don't, you know, if they don't want to talk about it, or you don't need to get, like, it's just something that you say. It's, again, yeah, it's like a formality. It makes things a little bit less awkward, I guess.
Okay. Entirely unrelated, but Adam, you talked about that, and I also immediately thought about that when I saw the guy. May we get John McPhail on one episode at some point?
Yes.
Absolutely, I'd love to.
I would love that.
Yeah,
really good.
I've got nothing but positive to say about this movie, actually.
Yeah.
And we'll get into even more, but he captures something that I haven't really seen in balanced before in a horror film and a musical at the same time, so I'm mightily impressed.
Yeah.
And I'd love to know what was going on in his own head, if it's inspired by more coming of age, or if it's inspired more by different horror films, because there's a lot of stuff in here that's like excellently balanced
homages.
Yeah.
On the back of that premiere that happened in September, there was in October for 10 days, he actually had his first full feature, Where Do We Go From Here, which was a very nice, lovely, about a guy in a retirement home. So if we got him, I'll talk about that also, just so you know.
Yeah, sounds great.
I'd love to have him on if he was up for it, yeah.
And maybe also because I actually told her and give her my card, Janet, at some point.
Yes.
That would be great.
Yes, that would be really cool. Yeah, I think my main thing that I liked about this film was that in the beginning, they weren't, like, they all had their own problems. And I feel like sometimes because they want that balance, everything's great and then suddenly it's awful, or everything's mundane or like everyday life and then the zombie apocalypse happens. But in this one, it feels like it's going to be a coming of age film where she decides if she's going to Australia or not, or she decides that she falls in love with John at the end. Because, you know, that's how most films end. Oh, he's just my geeky friend. And then they fall in love. Or, you know, Nick grows up to be someone who's actually likable. And he, you know, he just puts up a wall. And Lisa. The blonde American one. What's her name?
Steph.
Steph.
Thank
Lisa
you.
is the drama cliques.
Oh, that's hilarious.
We've got to get
Christmas
to that.
That's a great Christmas song. It was shocking. So they all have their problem. And actually, the interesting one is that Steph wants to talk about something that's real. Like, why don't we talk about how homelessness is a real big problem and we're not talking about things that actually need to be, you know, talked about and discussed. And then all these problems kind of seem to go away because everyone is dead. And then they start killing off people that you got connected to, and it's like, okay, this actually became really real. And it's one of the reasons why I quite liked Shaun of the Dead as well, because it kills off, like, it makes it more real. And it's not about sensationalism, it's actually just the fact that if there was a zombie apocalypse, not everyone's going to survive. Like, there might just be three people leaving a town, literally.
On the subject of John is absolutely who I was in high school.
Oh, really?
That is, and it was kind of surreal for me to watch this. I'm like, there is a film that's captured how a lot of people, like how I felt at school. I'm like, this is kind of incredible. So that made it even more heart-wrenching and annoying when he got done in. I'm like, oh God. Because I always, like, you always think as anybody, go, I'd be fine in a zombie apocalypse. And you're watching this going, I'd probably go out doing something like that, probably, yeah.
Yeah. I really wanted them to get together as well. I thought they were really cute as a couple.
And that's why this film works on so many levels. the film tells you in his first song that he is not going to make it, and that's not going to happen. I mean, the song's called Not a Hollywood Ending. Yeah. It tells you right there, it's like,
I don't get the girl.
This isn't going to happen, you know, and you want it to happen, and it, that is twisted away from you. Because of the great framing device that is a musical, you think, oh, it's going to work out in the end. Because name a musical that it doesn't really work out in the end. And La La Land doesn't count.
Yeah.
Because it kind of does work. Well, they get what they want, but they don't get to be together.
Umbrella's a Shibble doesn't work out.
That's true.
I feel like that was quite nice about this film. It was a film, and there were moments where it was feel good and might not be like reality, but the characters felt real and felt a bit more kind of like had a few dimensions to them, and everything wasn't romanticized. Like, I think that image of the couple that both become zombies at the same time and they like pass each other and they hold hands for like a second and then they like walk past each other. I thought that's such a genius idea because it's like they've lost something that they're not who they were before.
Yeah.
They're like not alive anymore, but they are. Like, it's a weird one, but you just realize how much so many of the characters have lost something.
Getting a bit of Mean Girls vibes as well from that whole Christmas show
moment. Yeah.
What a great scene.
Yeah.
The school moment, which kind of is almost the beginning of the inciting incident, just before it happens.
Yeah, because the headmaster then leaves, doesn't he? And he hears the banging, zombies outside. Yeah. That's actually a really good point, because in Mean Girls, it's the same thing. It's like a Christmas show that you think is going to be like, you know, for children and like festive and positive and all this stuff. And then it's like totally sexual.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. I've been listening to the soundtrack because I wanted to do a bit of music analysis for this. And I've noticed some really interesting things that I'll talk about when we get to the music. But
oh, great.
That whole song is marvelous in a way of like, how I love Ricky Gervais's Life, David Brent Life on the Road, where those songs are funny because they're written, you know, badly but goodly at the same time. This one is just
goodly.
This one is just pure gold the whole way through, because you're like, you try and work out if A, well, obviously she wrote it.
Oh, did she?
Well, the character surely wrote it.
Oh, the character wrote it.
Yeah. You can imagine, because it's her part of the show, she's written this piece, and you're trying to work out, like, is she writing, is she doing it ironically? Is she doing it genuinely? Did she see the irony? Does she not?
I know.
There's all these multiple layers to it that you're like,
is that a message to a boyfriend?
Yeah, you know, yeah. It could be anything there. You're trying to work out, and it really just presents what her character is in one song. It's like, and that's what's in musicals. If you get that moment, that's excellent, because when you get your first character's song in a lot of things, it's like, okay, this is who they are. Yeah. Like, think West Side Story when you start with the whole, the dance sequence in the beginning of the characters, that's through dance, but you definitely get an identity of who these two gangs are and their relationship between each other. So the first song for a character is always important to see who's, to get a personality across. And I think that song in particular does very well. Although the halibut fish rap is pretty good too.
Actually, it's interesting as well, because if you watch it again, that Hollywood ending song is probably a lot more poignant than it would have been the first time that you watch it, because it's quite a lot of the things that they talk about, it's like true, as you're saying, like John doesn't get the girl, he dies, and the two couples die.
And Anna sings about how the guy Nick is basically like a dickhead. She doesn't really care that he's like spreading rumors about her or that sort of thing.
And they become friends pretty much.
Yeah, they consolidate over what went wrong.
Yeah.
Although if there's anything I was a bit like the film, I wish the film had done more. No, I was disappointed in it. It's just like their relationship. I was kind of confused, but maybe I missed something. I wasn't like, I must have missed it about her and Nick.
Right.
I mean, yeah, the thing is was I was talking about earlier about organic exposition. It's I think it's perfectly done. I mean, you don't see, I mean, I always, as it's a musical, I will have more trouble to analyze what's said in the song, because I enjoy the melody more than the words.
Okay.
So what I'm coming from a place that I probably didn't really understand the whole movie, because the songs, I'm just enjoying the melody and how it goes with the lyrics. So I'm probably missing a few things, but I think it was how it was done, their relationship and the fact that they had something, and I think it was, well, it felt, it didn't feel as blatantly just like they had in The Illusionist, like coming out of the blue.
No, I don't mean that. I mean, I'm wondering if I missed something, but you do, obviously, when he's, you know, the sexy child line flirting bit, like, you get in that scene that they have history. He isn't just like the jock hitting on a pretty girl. You do get that as well. So that is in there. It was just, I was like, I couldn't work out, like, were they a thing? Does he just fancy her? Has he heard rumours about if she's, you know, up for it, as you do in school?
Before the Hollywood song, the fact that he looks at her and does that annoying, you know, two fingers up and licking in the middle, and it's like...
Oh, does he do that?
Yeah. Oh my God, that's why I laughed.
I missed that scene. I'm so sorry.
No, he looks at her and he does the obvious, you know, yeah.
He's not twisting the tongue that much, but it starts.
I must have missed that.
He's about so at that point I was like, oh, they must have slept together, or
he's heard
something happened.
Yeah.
And then when she's like, oh, I don't even care, I was like, oh, well, then he must have slept with her and then left her the next day, but then confused me because he's flirting with her, so I was a bit confused. But then when he talks about, you know, before he talks about, oh, I had to kill my dad, a bit of a feminist moment, just, you know, because I have to talk about this every single episode.
You don't do it every episode.
When
we haven't done it since Ghostbusters.
Well, I liked it because she was like, I don't care about the sex. And I was like, thank you. Like, there's this whole thing. It's like, oh no, everyone knows that I slept with this person. And it's like, Jesus Christ, like, women do sleep with people, you know? Like, I liked how she immediately was like, I don't care about the fact that people know that I slept with you. It's about the fact that afterwards you pretended that you didn't know me. And we actually had a really long chat about our parents and our situations, so why are you acting like an asshole afterwards? Like, the sex doesn't matter.
Well, we're on that line as well, actually, with strong female protagonists. I had a lot of Alien moments, you know, because Anna is the leader of the group, and if you think in zombie horror, you think like Walking Dead, Rick the leader, and most zombie films, it's the guy that is already been I think it's Cillian Murphy that's 28 Days Later, I believe it's him, right? With it's him and what was her name that did Moonlight and James Bond? Naomi Harris. Cillian Murphy that's I think it's him as the actor, but he's the main guy. A lot of the time in horror, it's, you know, unless you're doing, the female isn't leading the group, except Alien twists it. And I mean, obviously Laurie Strom is a beginning of that in the 70s with Halloween, but not totally to where we are in this film, where it's kind of a bit of both. Like, there's the vulnerability that Laurie kind of has, being like a young teenager being chased by Michael Myers, and the strongness of like a powerful female character like Ripley. So there's a nice balance of humanity between two that makes it feel a realistic character, because you can relate to her, because I can remember girls that were like that, like had a really quite hard exterior, or what could seem as a hard exterior, but in reality are just human beings. For some reason at school, the front comes up. So I thought that was quite nice to see a quite well-rounded and well-portrayed female character. So I thought that was pretty good too. Well, credit to the writing here.
Someone that sticks to her guns as well. You know, as soon as someone says something, they're not like, oh yeah, I'm going to fake, you know, who I am. Mm. It's just, this is who I am, and it might be tough through school, but I quite liked how she stuck to who she was.
Yeah.
The whole way through.
There is a scene I think you missed, Adam, because you were to the loo at that point.
I had to pee, yeah.
Which is, I think, is the moment when John realized that he was not going to get the girl. At one point...
Oh, yeah.
They are in a, how do you call those things at the shops? Caddies? No.
Shopping cart.
Yeah. And Anna is in there, and they're talking, and then she says something like... well, you're my best friend here. And she's like, just having this face, John. And then she reiterates, no, you're my best friend. And then you see on his face like, right.
Huh, I wonder if I'd seen that moment, the death would have been more obvious to me.
Well, that was her way of saying, stop. Like, we're just going to be friends.
Mm.
And then he, which interested me, because I actually didn't know if she knew that he liked her. So that was the first time that I realized that she knew, and that was her kind of shy way of being like, I'm not interested.
Well, lucky for us, we have a female host of the podcast. So, do you know, say if you have a group of friends, if you, I don't know if you've ever had this, like you hang out, did you have a best friend that was a boy? Like you hung out with a lot that turned out that fancied you at some point? Did that ever happen to you? or female, actually.
Yeah, probably, yeah.
Did you know that they liked you in that way?
Yeah.
Right.
You can usually tell because there are certain things that they'll say. There are looks. There are, you know, like, it's really hard to not show that you like someone, girl or boy, you know? Like, I feel like it's, and it's tough. And it's tough to watch someone that you like being flirting or whatever with someone else because it's hard not to take that personally. So yeah, I quite liked how they made, what I liked about it as well is that they were all quite likable. And there's, I think there are quite a lot of films where, you know, everyone has to be totally stereotypical in a box. Like, and John wasn't really a stereotypical geek or nerd or weirdo, or he didn't say really crass things to Anna. You know, like he was just this normal, lovely guy who just happened to fancy his best friend, and she didn't feel the same way. And I feel like,
do you mean John? I think you said Nick.
Did I?
I think you said Nick. Did you?
Oh,
say that?
Sorry. To be fair, Nick was quite stereotypical, but then it comes out later that he's actually just got, you know, a father who was in the army, and well, he's very broken.
He's like her. He puts up the front of being like the hard man because of the mates he hangs about with. Because especially in the song, No Such Thing as a Hollywood Ending, one of them wants to get up and dance and they don't. They're like, no, stay down.
Yeah.
So, you know, which is more funny when they have a dance number later on.
Yeah.
I really like that song.
Yeah, Nick is a bit broken. Yeah.
Yeah. Basically, I don't know. Of course, there were stereotypes. That's most films have to, because you have to connect with the characters, right, in some way. And you have to understand characters quite quickly. So that's why films use stereotypes so much. But I think they were a lot more subtle than they could have been. And I think it's been kind of done so many times. Like, the geek wants the really pretty girl and doesn't get her because he's just, you know, has braces and thick glasses and has no dress sense at all. And it's like, well, life doesn't really work out like that. I don't know. I feel like it was nice to not have, it felt like you were watching a real school, because everyone had different accents, which I thought was awesome, because that's just real life.
I could be
as wrong. You can hear on this podcast, you know.
I could be wrong. I'd have to ask if we did get him on. I believe the school that they use as the set is the school that they used for, now what was it called? It was a BBC thing at schools. It was a drama series. I think it went out everywhere. And now I can't.
Waterloo Road.
It looked like one of the schools that they used for Waterloo Road.
I see what you mean. It might
be the one where the teacher like fell off the roof.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
I think it might be that. It looked like one of those. Because why wouldn't it be? I mean, if it's filmed in Scotland, I know loads of people that went off to do Waterloo Road when I was at high school. Like, they were part of an agency that they could get that gig. So if that is, that's quite cool.
So talk a bit about Scotland and talk about homelessness. That's one of the two main reasons why I left Facebook. Last year, there was a social bite, which is, well, I don't remember exactly what it is, but basically they had this plan to make the slip in the park.
Do you want me to explain Social Bite a wee bit? Because I know a little about it. Social Bite is like a cafe or like a charity organization that basically when you walk in, you can get your coffee and whatever, and you can also pay for somebody else's. So the idea is that you buy a homeless person that can come in and they can get a coffee or a sandwich or whatever because you've already paid for it. So it's already paid for. So they can walk off and get like a hot drink or whatever. And they've recently, which you're going to go and explain, have done this charity thing where they sleep in a park.
Well, yeah, okay. Well, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, well, it's interesting, this concept, because I went to Morocco for a few weeks and they have this in the souks. They keep all the vegetables that are not readily available for being sold or whatever in one specific corner, but hidden. So the people coming can still maintain the dignity while taking some of the food.
Right.
Kind of thing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So Sleep in a Park, it started last year. The idea is to collect money for, last year it was to build a shelter, to build a whole facility to have rooms and sleep, basically kind of an hotel for
a hostel kind of thing.
To get rid of homelessness in Scotland, pretty much.
Mm.
So this Sleep in the Park is one night to enter, which I did last year, but it didn't go through because Facebook, well, anyway, so you pay yourself 50 quid to get into the thing, and then you have to validate the thing, have some other people add at least that.
Right.
So that's 100. So then you have your ticket to go sleep the whole night in Edinburgh on the 9th of the December,
right,
around. And all night you've got artists. I think there was Stephen Fry last year. And you, depending on what you give, the amount of people you manage to bring, you get special evening with those artists or whatever.
Mm.
And no one added anything to the pot last year.
When you signed up?
Yeah, I signed up and I created an event and I publicized everything on my Facebook and nothing came through.
It is tricky with fundraising because when you put, so I think there's a difficulty with Facebook and with social media in general that there's an air of disconnect if you just put a post up, because it's so easy for somebody just to say, oh, I like that, and that's
enough.
And
then move on.
That's their commitment.
Yeah.
Whereas with something like that, you can sign up and you just put it on your wall, people can just ignore it. Whereas I reckon you have to chase it, you know, you have to message people going, hey, could you donate, and so on and forth. Yeah. Like it has to be a more, like you would do in the old fashioned days, you would go around to people's houses, which I had to do when I did fundraising at school, and ask, I'm doing a sponsored this and this, would you like to give any money for it?
You know, maybe you wonder how you're doing it, because on the same week I had some a Facebook friend collecting funds for some people that were way, way farther, education for girls in Africa, which is also nice. But I didn't manage to get anything for any locally.
I think, I don't know. I remember there was an altercation with that as well when you posted that, which wasn't, I just don't understand the disconnect between trying to do an event that can help. You know, the problem is with so many charities that sometimes we judge a charity straight away because we're like, is that, because you don't know whether all the money is going to like raising awareness or it's going straight to a cause. Like there's been multiple cases of like, you find out laterally that, oh, the money gets spent on awareness, which is the case of like, say some people, I don't know who, I won't say names because I don't know the companies that do such and such, but some people get paid money to do the clipboard walking down the high street. And that counts as raising awareness. So that's where some of the money goes, which is like, isn't that a false economy? Because you're literally just giving that person money, you know, as opposed to giving it to the charity.
I think as well, like, it's very easy to judge, you know, say, oh, don't you think it's slightly patronizing to do it for one night when these people are homeless, like for years and years and years? And it's like, but if it's sponsored and the money is going towards buying a shelter or sorting out things for people that are going through that, surely it's not, because you're doing it for a reason. I think that we've lost touch with why you're doing something. It's not because, oh, look, see, I can do it. Like, look how, you know, oh, we survived. Ha ha ha. Like it's not, it's also not going to help anyone if you are like, oh yeah, let me try this out for a year. Like, you might as well do it for one night and try and get sponsored and get money for shelters, because that's the only way that people on the streets will get food, water, sanitary products, even a bed. Like, you know,
it's not even like, what's the big deal about, or you're sleeping outside, how is that anything like what they go through? Yeah. But what the fuck has a sponsored bungee jump got to do with raising money for like cancer research? It's like, I would say the sleeping in the park, the sense of solidarity, because surely that it's, well, for instance, when I was at high school, one of the most important events that happened to me at high school and made me grow up is we did a battlefields tour, which is when we drove all the way down from across to Britain, to Belgium and France, to look at World War One graveyards and battlefields. And we learned about, we went to the places and learnt history from people that were, well, not people that were there, but people that now look after these sites. And We saw, for example, like I posted on my Instagram, it was on my Facebook, which is called Teat Val, which is a memorial for missing people in, that were never found during the Battle of the Somme. I mean, it's huge. And there's about 70, I think there's 77,336 names on it. And that event, me going to see all these things and learn about these personal stories, like there was a boy, I think it's Daniel Sturridge, who was 14, and he's buried next to his father because they both died in combat, because the dad went out because the son had signed up. So he went, I'm not going to let my own son go out on his own. And he joined the same regiment and went out with his son. So they both went out together. Mm. But the point was that because I'd seen these things for myself and experienced, you know, because we went, the premise of the trip is you are like a battalion. We were like the 7th Queen Anne, which was the high school I went to, Pals Battalion, because that was a thing in the First World War. You all signed up together and you all got signed into the same battalion and regiment, which had a devastating effect here in Scotland because it wiped, lots of small towns were complete, the men were wiped out because they would all die together. They all went to the same battle. They all went in the same battle and they all died. That was that small town ruined because all the men were dead. You know, that was it. The population decreased and those towns eventually would die out because unless people moved in. Anyway, because we went as this group, we bonded together like what would happen to these people that went there. And it gave you a newfound respect for, you know, like Remembrance Sunday. And like, I always have open conversations with people that don't support like wearing a poppy because of, like, because I've been to these places and I've seen the graves and the amount of people that gave their lives for a cause. You know, it gives you a found respect. So in the same regard with sleep in the park, I think that's quite a good idea. Because if you spend one night absolutely freezing, and then, because I've seen a few people that I know have done it on Instagram, and one of them posted on their story when they got home, they were like, a photo of their bed, like, I've never been more happy to be here. And I'm like, that's exactly the point. Because when you get home and you can get into the bed, you realise, well, homeless people can't do this. You know, I'm lucky in my chance that I've experienced what they've experienced and I get to go home. And now because I know what that feels like, I should try, I want to help people feel how I felt.
Exactly.
You know? So I think the idea of sleeping in a park is not, I don't think the idea of it's like, what's that going to do? How's that helping? Is that not, how can you relate to that? It's insulting because they have to do it every night. Is the wrong attitude to have with it. It's a way of experiencing something that somebody else has, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you don't, just like you did your research with all those places, even though I didn't remember what Social Bite was, I did my research on what they were before trying to get into that. So it also depends how it's presented. And like yesterday, I went to do some shopping after the movies because I went to see movies all this week. And I questioned myself for a second when I was out of the Sainsbury's. You know, those boxes with like that says that you can leave?
Oh, for the food bank.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, well, I just purchased 2 full bags of stuff. What happens if I just leave them in that?
They get picked up and taken to different food banks because I think in Scotland, I know a good few places, and actually Pasha and Christy would be the two to talk to because they've just done a play about food banks. So they thought it was a bit silly because the director went, you should go to a food bank and help out for one day. And they were like, oh, I don't want to be, you know, like method acting. Is that not a bit too method?
But they went. So would the people that are actually going be like, well, these actors, that's a bit like patronizing again, like,
yeah,
how do you do it without being like, oh, so how do you feel about this,
yeah,
rather than actually, you know.
So they would be the best two to ask how that, what happens with the supermarket thing, like to go through or the food banks. If we talk about a movie that has that, like maybe Daniel Blake, maybe we should have one of them, either both of them or one of them on to do it.
The church that I have had rehearsals in, they have a food bank connected to them, and so we see quite a lot of people coming through and bringing like bags and bags and bags of stuff. And also people that come specifically for the food or any products that they need. And I think what was nice, and in terms of how easy it was, how friendly it was, but also how harrowing, because there was a boy who looked like he was 15 and he was dirty and he looked so awkward and timid and like ill, and it was really heartbreaking because it was like, there's nothing I can do, but this is the problem that we're facing, that like this spans all ages and we don't know how you would get into that situation, but that could be you one day. And it's like, it's so important that these things are out there, and it's it's not, and it's easy, you know, it's accessible and people know about it because it's everywhere. And I think that shocked me because it's something that you're not, it's not always in your face all the time. But when you know, you're just walking and doing whatever you're doing, and then someone walks in and is like very timidly, like in the hallway, just waiting for someone to give them a bag of supplies. It's like, but where is that boy now going? Do you know what I mean? Like, I had no idea if he was just going into the street.
It's interesting to link back to the film because the start of the film with him, we're first introduced to Steph, is there's like a collection table for homeless people at Winter. And that, to link into Scotland, when I was a kid at my primary school, I don't know if you had this, Anouk.
Yeah.
Harvest festivals.
Yeah, we did that too.
So for international listeners and Jan, the Harvest Festival, if they don't have it, is like in autumn, like usually like September, at my primary school, you had to bring in like tins of stuff, like tinned fruit, tinned vegetables, tinned whatever you had. And you would collect it and then it was given to older people in the community. And that was when I was at primary school. I would be surprised if now it's not collection for food banks and stuff like that. So yeah, there is in this film the homelessness issue is raised to bring us gently back into the film area.
I was talking to Pasha and Christy actually the other day, and you could just see the emotion that they had. It was like an immediate emotional connection that they had, that maybe if you didn't know or you hadn't been or you hadn't seen certain things, you wouldn't have. So I think that just reiterates the fact of, like, I think sleeping rough for one night is as good, because just seeing that emotional connection in there, because they've done a play and they've talked to people that are actually going through it. It's the same thing. It's like, you, and I think human beings are like that, you know, you always hear, oh, I started up this charity because my mum died or my sister has this disease, that like you only have that connection if you know or you've seen it firsthand. And so
I think
that's, it's a very human thing and it's really needed. So I disagree that it's patronizing, or especially if you do it in a respectful way. Like, of course, if you know you're going to a food bank and you're like,
some of them feel like there are plenty of people really annoyed by Bono because what he's doing feels a bit weird for a billionaire.
Right.
But
do you know the Heckle story about that?
No.
You know, when he's doing, it was either Live Aid or Band Aid, and he goes, every time I snap my fingers, a child in Africa dies. And somebody in the crowd goes, well, stop clicking your fingers then.
Oh no,
you know, my dad told me that one. I don't know if it was in Scotland, but it's more for, I can imagine a Scottish or a British crowd doing that, you know, that heckle. But
that is quite a British thing. Yeah,
I don't know.
Everyone is dying to hear about your music analysis now, Adam.
Oh, we're here, right? Yeah. So, well, this afternoon while I was doing the dishes, I was like, you know what, I'll put the headphones on and I'll listen to some music. And I thought, you know what, I'll go and listen to Anna and the Apocalypse, because I really did like a lot of the songs. Like, I'll give it a go. So I was listening to it, and this film describes itself as a Christmas zombie musical, and it's very accurate, especially in some music choices. In all of the songs that I listen to, there is either the sleigh bells going like in the background, almost like in a lot of tracks, you'll have a clicked track, not even a click track, just like the whole, like a drum beat, you know, like, you know, in any club music, you'll hear drummers call it four to the floor, which is essentially you just hit the bass pedal four times and it continues so people can dance to the beat. That's mainly why four to the floor is used, because it's easy for people to follow.
Mm-hmm.
I had a drum tutor that was when he was in a band, the band had written it was my music teacher, actually, Mr. Livingston. They had a song that was in 7/8, which meant every time you got to the end of the song, the beat wasn't there. So you would have people dancing, and they would play it at these live gigs purely because people would be trying to dance to it, and then whenever the next verse started, they would be out of time, and they couldn't work out why they were out of time.
Mm.
They're like, how did we miss a beat? And it's because it was composed in a different time signature than then standard dancing. Anyway, so the fact that they use sleigh bells that are underlying in most of the tracks, and also the keyboard sound effects are very like Christmassy sounding, you know, like that really bright, almost, you know, Feed the World, you know, that very like high sound of the keyboard, the do, 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 those sort of key sounds that are in there, they're present through most of the tracks, especially Soldier of War, which is Nick's song.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, even in a Hollywood Ending, you can hear the sleigh bells are in there as well. So there's a lot of music that is in there that emphasizes the Christmassy feel to it, which I feel is a really good decision, because that also, whereas people relate to, you know, Die Hard being a Christmas movie, the music in here will remind you of Christmas, no matter what time of the year you see it. The film will work if you see it whenever you want, but there is that little Christmassy thing in the music that you go, oh yeah, it's Christmas.
Yeah,
okay. So that was quite nice in there.
In the credits of Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, the very last song, if you don't go into the end, you don't hear it, is Spidey Bells, Spidey Bells. And then there's a point where the guy, he's actually talking to, why did I go into this crappy song? I did studies on very...
I was trying to work out if Not a Hollywood Ending is a marathon, which we've seen before in a film that we've discussed it before. I know we definitely have talked about a marathon in one of the episodes. Whereas the best example is in, Les Mis, or the one I know off by heart, is the Tonight from West Side Story, where they're all like singing together.
Oh, about different things.
Yeah, so a marathon is when it's the same song where they're singing different lines, but it still works all together, you know?
Which is obnoxiously overlap here on podcasting.
Yeah, I know why we talked about it. We never recorded the episode. We didn't do the South Park episode, did we?
No, we didn't.
No, because it was in there, the song, they even quote it, they go, when did this song become a marathon? Because they're singing different things. I don't know. I couldn't work out in my head, because I know they were singing different lines, because Lisa and her boyfriend, I can't remember his name.
Chris.
They're singing their lines, which is like, we're a perfect match, I hope this never ends, and then Anna's singing her bit.
Mm-hmm.
But I couldn't work out if that counts as a marathon or not. It might be. I don't know enough about like the actual technicalities of what makes it a marathon, but it's close. It has a marathon-esque feel. I'll go as far as that to say. Also, musically-wise, I thought that, I said this earlier, that the way that they're layered into the narrative as well is very good. And it also twists when you think there would be one. Because if it was a traditional musical, right, you would have, when John sacrifices himself, that would be a song. You know, like him being eaten by the zombie would be a song. And almost...
They have that in Les Mis when... Oh, no, I can't remember names.
Stars, isn't it? When he's about to jump off the bridge.
No. Well, yes, but when Eponine is shot.
Oh, yeah.
She dies in...
Marius's. What's his?
Yeah, Marius's arms, and she sings a song. Rain will make the flowers grow.
Mm.
Is that the one that got the Oscar to Anna Hathaway?
No, that's Anne Hathaway. That's the I Dreamed a Dream.
Eponine is played by, is it Samantha... something. She's actually Eponine in the West End. Oh. So she's a musical theatre actress.
The other thing I was going to mention about the music is I even thought, and it was quite nice because they sort of did it. The very last song, which is when everyone is dying, her dad is dying. The scene Anouk briefly mentioned with the two, Lisa and Chris, touch hands as zombies, and it's Anna and Nick outside singing as the zombies come closer in, you know. I was listening to that one as well, and it's very nicely done where they're like, you almost want it to cut back to Chris and him be alive, not fully turned yet, so that he could sing, but it doesn't. So it again, with the idea of like, this isn't fully a musical, it's a zombie film, it's a zombie musical effect, like it's a bit of both, that it doesn't completely stick to the narrative of like, all right, let's everyone have a song, like even if they were dying, they would sing.
Mm.
Like,
or even if they actually were a zombie.
Yeah, a zombie singing, like how in, I don't know if Jan's seen it, but at the end of the first series of Skins, it like stops and it becomes, they start singing, it's not Mad World, is it? It's, I can't remember the name of the song. It's,
well, I don't remember it, but I've seen it.
You know the bit Skins. Where, you know the bit where at the end after Thingy gets hit by a boss and what's his face with the heart?
Oh, baby, baby, it's a man. Wow.
I think it may be Mad World, like that one. They sing that, and even...
it's Wild World, isn't
Wild
it?
World, that's it. Even the guy that's hit by the bus is singing it as well. So there's everything like there.
Sid starts it, doesn't
Sid,
he?
That was the name. Yeah, Sid.
Oh, I used to love Sid.
So yeah, and also nice touch as well is the almost the battle between the teacher and Anna, like put on a show in the hall was a good song as well.
Yeah.
Last thing about the music, it's produced by Interscope. Interscope, for people who don't know, they should watch the Defiance ones on Netflix, or I think it's HBO have it as well. I think it might be an HBO documentary, so if you're in America, it might be on HBO Go. their streaming service, but it's about the partnership between Jimmy Iovine and Dr. Dre, and they founded Interscope Records. So this album is produced by the same record company that produced Eminem's stuff and Gwen Stefani stuff and Lady Gaga and many other big names. So I thought that was quite a cool little link as well.
I must say, and this will explain my rating later, that every time that Breakaway song comes up, I get goosebumps.
Which one's Breakaway again?
That's when she is, that's the very first, well, the very first song, which is before the title, is the Christmas, it means nothing without you,
yeah.
But the first one after that.
Yeah, that's a lovely song.
She's going through the hallway, yeah.
Yeah.
And him, yeah, they're all in different bits singing about their lives. Yeah, that's a good one as well. I hadn't listened to that when I was cleaning the dishes, but if I had, I'd probably have mentioned
it too. Isn't that a marathon?
It might be, but I don't think they all join in at the same time.
Do they not?
No,
I think it's all segmented.
Oh, okay.
If they joined in together, it might be.
Right, okay. So Hollywood Ending is a little bit more, but I don't know if they have the same.
Yeah, Hollywood Ending is closer because the end of it is like a marathon, not the beginning of it.
Two of three songs where they do that, but not the whole. So yeah, every time, like, it was, well, the three times I've seen it. So that's a pretty good sign of what I feel about something usually.
Mm-hmm.
I did like that this film, and this is the point I've said I'd talk about later, is it balanced so much of horror that I didn't really expect it to. Because when you hear of a zombie musical, you're like, all right, it's not going to be a full-on zombie film. But this really tapped into a lot of stuff that some zombie films even miss, you know? And it plays with funnier ones. There's almost an homage to Cockneys versus Zombies in this. Cockneys versus Zombies is I haven't seen the full film, but the scene that I'm reminded of, there's a scene in Cockneys versus Zombies where they've just realized the outbreak's happening, and they're like older people. They're like older Cockneys, like retirement home age. Because the scene I'm talking about in the film is when the old folks sit on when they're hiding in the ball pit.
Mm.
They're using it like a Trojan horse, you know, they're hiding in it. And then the old woman sits on it.
Yeah.
In Cockneys versus Zombies, there's a scene where an older man is like asleep in a deck chair, and the leader of the group shouting, and I can't remember his name, I'll just say, Reg, behind you. And he turns around and there's a zombie, and it's the zombie really walking slowly and the Cockney guy like using a Zimmer frame to like run away. So I really like that sort of comedic with old people in a zombie film that was here. To the contrasting sense, by the end of the film, if we start like Shaun of the Dead, the end of the film is like 28 days later.
Mm-hmm.
Like just the darkness that's presented, the reality of everyone's dead, you know, and the heroes are, it looks like they're going out. Because I thought like maybe Steph had just grabbed the keys and ran, you know, because it's so unclear. You never know if it's going to happen. And I like that there was not a predictability in some zombie films that there is, because, you know, they're trying to capture what either Dawn of the Dead or Shaun of the Dead reinvented with comedy. They're always going for the sort of the same strategies, you know, like, you know, the outbreak happens, the lone survivor finds group have a clash of leadership. There's always one guy that's a bit more annoying. He gets torn apart. Likeable people die. And then, you know, like trapped to the end, only a few people left. Like, so there is these set pieces that a lot of zombie films have. But this one, even though they were kind of there, you know, like we have to get to this place because people we know are there. But even if that's a trait, that's what you would do, I feel. Like, for example, if Anouk was in a certain place and I was in a certain place, I'm like, I'm going to try and get there. Because the person I care about might be alive or dead. So there was a lot in here that I was so impressed that it didn't become just like standard zombie film. Like it kept the twists and the turns and stuff. And again, with the music, it was a nice way of probably separating that from any other film. Because I also feel that if you took one aspect away from it, would the film work on its own? And I'm quite happy to say that I don't want to do it either. You know, in some kinds, sometimes when you get a film that's like, oh, it's part comedy, it's part drama, you're like, well, the drama side was better, but the comedy side was better. This one, it balances both. Like, both are integral to the story and the storytelling, which I thought was really quite impressive.
Mm-hmm.
To be a bit more specific about what this film does to me, I used goosebumps, but you know that, I don't know, it's a bit more like a shiver. You know, it probably won't speak to any female listeners, but when you're a man and you're about to take a pee, there's one moment that you get like if you were electrified, like the ooh, kind of thingy.
The first pee you do in the morning is quite a good analogy for that. The like, ah, the niceness to it.
Yeah, well, it's like this something that lasts less than a second, like this kind of instant tenth of a second bliss. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you, that's what I've been feeling the three times I've watched that specific start of Breakaway.
Yeah, I think it's like, I agree with that mostly because of quite a lot of the things that they were singing about, I could relate to, like being at school and feeling like no one really understood you and feeling lonely and not really knowing what's happening, you know, tomorrow and the next few years, like, oh, should I go to uni or should I go to Australia and all this kind of stuff. Like, will I get the girl? And I probably won't. And, oh, she doesn't like me, he doesn't like me. All of these things that we kind of go through, but it was quite stark. And I think that's what growing up can be like. Like, it can be quite a dark moment, especially if you don't have, like, you know, your support network around you, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's just me being obsessed with the Ella Hunt's voice.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Something Anouk said to me the other day was quite interesting, that some people might pick apart this film. It's like, oh, it says it's Scottish, but there's not everyone is a Scottish actor. And I kind of disagree with that. Is like Anouk said, especially that it had a universal feel for Britain. Like it could be anywhere. You know, it could be any school in Britain, which I think is a really good point, actually.
So it's Port Glasgow and they made it into New Haven, which is, I wondered also, which is, it looks and feels and sounds a bit like it's supposed to be in the US, doesn't it? At some point, because I heard, or maybe it was because of someone's accent that I had, like, oh, they used that version of the world, which is American.
I felt like the town was really British, though.
Yeah.
Like, that didn't feel American at all. Mm. I think the setting, we are so used to it being in America. So, like, you know, like people singing through school halls and stuff and, like, locker room, whatever. Yeah, that those moments were like, oh, that. But I think the town was really British. And I quite liked that because it was like, well, you don't see that very much, do you?
Oh, the school felt so British. It was great.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you're just with the, especially, right, with the tables with the wheels.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That's what my tables at primary school were like. And they got pushed to the side of the hall and that would be where gym was. It was like, I'm like, oh, especially with the scene where they're pushing them back, trying to fight off the zombies.
When they like fold like,
that is,
together.
Yeah, I'm just like, that is a great idea. That's amazing. I love that.
Oh dear, yeah.
Almost really expected that scene from like start throwing, get the bag of random balls that was in every gym hall, just throwing basketball and dodgeballs at them.
Do we feel we have stuff to add?
A good way to wrap it up for me is I liked also this film's way of calling back to itself and riffs foreshadowing the ending. For example, with the teacher, we have the star that comes down, like that's in the beginning as well, and that's ultimately how he meets his end.
Yeah.
And also the car. We start in the car, we end in the car.
Yeah.
We start going to school and we end leaving school. So there is a lot of that which I do like in films.
Steph is great.
Yeah.
Boom, saved your life.
I liked how kind of brutal she was and like just kind of starkly saying what was needed to say, like. But she was the one that was kind of not really understood in the beginning, and she kind of saved nearly everyone's life throughout the whole thing. Like she was the one person that kind of came through.
What did you guys think about the headmaster?
Quite strange.
Yeah.
I feel like he was kind of pantomimey at times. Like the song that he has when he's like locked up in the in the kind of dining, like the kitchen area.
There, yeah.
Yeah. It felt quite pantomimey or stereotypical baddie song, or that like he was kind of slowly going mad but like really over the top. And so like there were moments where it was like, you know, suspend your disbelief or your own reality, like this is, you know, back to watching a film, which is a bit more fun because it had the lighting as well, which was kind of darker, and he had this crazy hair and crazy scientist look
on there. Actually, they talk about disbelief suspending in one song. I think that's Hollywood ending. Watching the version with the lyrics in the popping up everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
He has a verse on that as well. Actually, the teacher does have.
Yes, yeah, slowly.
That's, yeah, that's the one I did at the start of this episode.
Oh, was it?
Ah.
That was my impression of Professor Savage.
I'm sorry, and I missed that. I to begin with, I was like, he's a bit caricature-y, but it was quite nice to see that we had a teacher like that at high school, and it was just like an ultra stickler for the rule, and he was a dickhead. Because he came, it was funny because we were in the final year of high school and he came in and tried to like upset his authority, and we're like, we're leaving in like 6 weeks.
Yeah, who are you?
We're like, we really don't care what you're trying to achieve here. We're like,
yeah.
He once took out, there's a guy in my year called Lewis Simpson. This is a great shout out for people from Dunfermline because my friends all know Lewis. This story is we had study periods, which essentially in fifth or sixth year, you choose what subject you take and you don't have to fill all the columns. So if you have a free column, everyone else is at a class, you would have a study period and you had to sign yourself in to prove that you were there. You couldn't just like bunk off and go like down the shops. Although people would, and they would just get your mate to sign you in.
Mm.
Anyway, so that's what happened. He was like, I'm going to be a bit late, sign me in. And his mate signed him in under a name that wasn't his own. And the guy came in and he was like, he looked at the list and went, Lewis Simpson, can I like see you outside? And so he goes outside. I'm like, why is he getting pulled out? And he came back in and he was so annoyed. And we're like, why did you get pulled out? He's like, because my mate signed me in as Lewis Pugwash Simpson. Like, I was like, that was the stick. That's how much of a stickler of the rule is. This because you'd put like a funny name in the middle of your name. He was like, why have you signed in like this? And it's like, get over yourself, Robbo. Get over yourself, Mr. Yeah. Robinson. It's like, you're upset, like ridiculous.
We have a nickname in French for those type of people, Petit Chef, which is those people who have whatever small their amount of power they were given, they use it to the maximum they can.
I bet you had a lot of that in the Navy. I bet there would have been some people that as soon as they got like a little bit of responsibility were a bit OTT.
Well, the thing is, so you've got the rank people, so the smallest, then you've got petty officers and then officers.
Mm.
And as officers, their schools, they're told from the start that they're the best. They tend to take that in their mind at some point. And there are some, but on the whole, except one guy on my very first ship, actually, always went rather smoothly.
That's not bad.
Yeah.
But yeah, to round off, so I did know a teacher that was like that. So that mixed in with, you know, there's always the guy in the zombie movie that is a bit mad. You know,
mm-hmm.
So that was a nice amalgamation. And finally, before I know, we're going to go into the rating. Shout out to the actor that plays Mr. Gill, the retiring headmaster. In the shot where he's like just chatting to his two school kids, I'm like, I quite like this acting in the background for an extra, like just doing a bit extra. And then obviously in the school show, he's like so happily bobbing along with the aww, really innuendo-y song. And I was like, that's some great stuff.
So sweet. So,
yeah. Okay. Are we good?
Yeah,
we good?
And Chris grandmother with the two thumbs up.
Oh, yeah. Oh, dear. Right. So, Anouk Yan was Anna in the Apocalypse. Good, bad, or just plain standard? Anouk?
Oh, so good, so good. Almost a masterpiece.
Jan?
Well, I'll put that in a category where I would put Once More with Feeling, Dr. Horrible, My Left Right Foot that I saw on stage. It's perfect.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
I'd say it's a genre changer. If Shaun of the Dead reinvented comedy, this reinvented the idea of musical coming of age and zombie films. So for me, yeah, masterpiece. I super enjoyed this. This is my film of the year. It's like this is on, especially as it's like a smaller budget, you know, something that comes out this well together and not interfered with like massive producers that, or if it was, you can't tell. There's something really magical about this piece of cinema. So for me, it's a strong masterpiece. It's in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right.
And I do remember, everyone listening, that I have huge struggles with musical, but that will be one big exception to the rule.
Yeah.
We're slowly converting you, Jan.
Yeah. so glad.
Cool.
Yeah.
So it's for our patrons, but only for patrons who's been supporting us for a while, because it's easier. So we've got some stuff for you guys. And to make it easy, you just have to select what you want and we'll give it to you next time we see you. because we don't like to post stuff. So there's the CD, that's the album with the special cover, cartoonish cover.
Oh, nice.
And the standard one, which is more standard, and the book.
Not just plain standard, I hope.
No. That's the other one. On the back, you've got the Orion logo. The movie studio actually picked it up for the US. You know, you remember Orion. I don't know how you pronounce that, but that's the constellation.
Orion.
Yeah. Cool. Mm-hmm. The book, that's a novelization, apparently, so.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah. And obviously, we've got a few of those Scottish posters. And yeah, that's pretty much. And also one vinyl, because I ordered one for myself and a second one, which will come rather soon. And a few stuff unrelated, but Quantum Leap, I got the box set today, which is actually, I'd like to congratulate and thank everyone involved in the making of this show. For many reasons, but right now specifically for the fact that it was one of the few shows that were shot on 35 millimeters at the time.
Ooh, nice.
So it's actually been restored in full HD, which is quite nice.
Lovely.
Yeah, and also I just subscribed to this little magazine.
Oh, is that the Edgar Wright cover?
Yeah, that's the Edgar. Well, this one I got on eBay because I was not subscribed when it happened.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, you've got Empire 30s Celebrating Adventurous Filmmaking.
They had a recent one out that was a whole magazine devoted to Alien that I never picked up. But
yes.
I looked at it. I was like, oh, that's quite nice. Cool. That's so these are a little thank you to our Patreons, like I believe you on, right?
Absolutely.
Right.
You just, I posted some stuff, so you just need, I'll post the list, which, well, it will already be out when you see this episode.
Yeah.
Anyway, so you'll know about that already.
Cool.
And yeah, vinyl, this is the one I got also, and Bio Records.
Oh, yes, of course.
Yeah, I've been on a vinyl craziness lately. I'm not entirely sure how it started, but
We should say, because this probably will be like episode like 67, 66, something around that, right?
Yeah.
So we're getting close to the 100 mark. So if you're thinking about becoming a Patreon subscriber on the back of we're giving away stuff like this, we should mention that giving away stuff will not be based on your level of donation. So if you donate $1 and you've been subscribed for like a longer period, because I know what Jan's saying, there will be no discrepancy on what you can get. So if you join up now, and by the time we hit 100 and give away some more stuff, probably you'll be eligible no matter how much you donate. So don't feel that you have to give like loads of money to get a better thing, because that's not the case.
No, of course.
Yeah. It's just like the latest Patreon we had just happened.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So yeah.
Cool.
So that's
so Merry Christmas and thank you all for the Patreons that we have and all the listeners at home.
Yeah.
That constantly turn up to listen to us ramble about films. Without you, we wouldn't be doing this, because every time we do one of these moments, we're like, oh, we just started this as something to do. But I can't imagine not doing this now. So just it's nice to know people listen. So thank you very much for continuing to turn up for any movie that we talk about.
Yeah,
especially this one, because this one deserves to be talked about. I saw somebody post on, there's a community on Facebook for actors, that its majority is student projects or like short films and stuff like that, talking about we need to get the word out about Anne and the Apocalypse. And I think that's very true, because I would love to see this get a wide release and see it again. So
oh yeah, when I saw it in September last year, I was like, with Cat, we were like, well, they're going to make a ton of money.
Yeah.
So if you like the sound of a music, if you like the sound of the premise of a zombie musical, you won't be disappointed. Even if you're not a fan of musicals, because Jan has been bowled over by this. So you owe it to yourself to watch this one. If there's one film to watch this year, I would say definitely this one.
Definitely.
And to conclude, I'd like to point everyone here to a wonderful app called Spotist on the App Store. And if you use the code Jan,
shut up, Jan.
You'll be able to get extra lives. 10 years ago, I started to purchase, a while ago, to purchase magic tricks or magical stuff on a website called Penguin Magic. And it turns out that a few months ago, they had a plan to do this little app that actually makes you spot differences between two images and win real cash. And That's what I've been trying to do to win real cash daily.
We all play this. This isn't an ad, by the way, just so you know, we've not been paid to say this. Jan has shamelessly plugged his own tag so he can get extra lives and win more money. So we should put all our names out like we did with the Cineworld card that one time on this episode. We'll put each one's codes out.
Do you have them already?
Yeah, I updated it. Okay. As soon as you update the app, you get it as well.
Okay, so what's yours? Adam?
No. Probably Edam. E-D-A-M. I'll share it for the link of this one when it goes public. Yeah, it's cool. So just to round off, how much money have you won each on Spotist?
Like $2.
$2? How much are you at, yeah?
For the 4 weeks of beta tests, which was because when you with Test Flight on Apple Store, it's limited to 100 people.
Mm.
So I must have earned, and I only played 4 times in 3 weeks. So that's, well, 20.
That's not bad.
But I must have earned max 20 on the new one with everyone involved. So 14 total something.
I think it's like 12. So it's fun though. It's a good game.
It's so fun. I'm really bad at it. I still play it every time I can. Like it's so much fun.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Anyway, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Yeah.
Thanks for listening.
Happy holidays.
Yeah, happy holidays wherever you are in the world.
Christmas is all around me. And so the feeling grows. And if we get, I'm going to get naked. No. Kids.
So
don't buy drugs.
Where will we be, each of one of us, if this comes out on the 25th? Where are we all?
Berlin.
Well, me and Anouk are in Berlin, probably enjoying some early morning beverages of the beer kind. Where are you, Jan? Back in Provence?
I'll be with family. Yeah, good. In Provence, yeah, Provence. Yeah,
25. Nice.
My brother's little family, part of the UK family, won't be because he does 1 year in France, 1 year in
London. We kind of do the same thing, yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
They'll be around on the 27th, I think.
Nice.
Yeah. All right. See you in the new year. The episode you'll probably hear after this is the 2018. It's a wrap. Which we'll need to do, which probably will be like a 15-20 minute episode of us talking about
Spidey bells, stuff. Yeah. All the way. Okay, yeah, indeed. So see you around.
See you around.
As always, we were
Adam,
Anouk,
and Jan. Bye bye.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Good, the Bad, and the Just Plain Standard podcast. If you like what you heard, you can leave us a review via iTunes. If you want to keep up to date with what we're doing, you can check us out on Facebook and Instagram at Good Bad Standard Podcast on both platforms. If you fancy seeing the live streams that we talk about on the podcast, they can be found on youtube.com. You search for Milk in a Wine Glass. There are other bits and bobs on there too, just to see what Jan's up to during the week. And if you really like us, like really, really like us, why don't you head on over to patreon.com/goodbadstandardpodcast and have a look if you want to support us. Any small donation is appreciated.